Good morning to you, my dear people. Very good morning to you, my dear listeners. Good morning to you, Namibia. We had some, you know, some technical problems. So we're starting around 8 o'clock. So we're starting around 8 o'clock. So welcome. Good morning to you and thanks for joining us. It's a very cold Tuesday. This morning. Hopefully, you know, you have an extra coat or jersey or jacket, you know, especially for the small one. Make sure that they are really warm enough, you know, to get out of the house. So good morning to you. Welcome to Eagle FM and thanks for joining us this morning and thanks for just for choosing Eagle FM to be in your company this morning. As I said, it's a cold morning and we started a little bit later. We had some difficulties much earlier on and we're live and thanks for joining us at this time. So let's start as we usually do. And my name is Mike Oshoveli, and you are tuning to Unpacking the Day, the show where we dive deep into the stories, events, and issues that shape our world. So this show is all about breaking down the headlines, exploring the context behind the news, and understanding how it impacts our lives. So whether it is the latest development in politics, so business, culture, or social issues, we're here to make sense of all it, of it all together. So, but it is not just about us doing the talking. It's about you. Share your thoughts, opinion, and perspective on the topics that matter most to you. So this is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So if you're just joining us, today is the 10th. It's Tuesday, the 10th of the month of June, and let's get into our segment of on this day in Africa. What happened on this day in Africa? So, on the 10th of June in 1990, South African President F.W. de Klerk announced the end of the state of emergency that had been in place since 1986 under apartheid. So this marked a crucial turning point toward political reform and the dismantling of apartheid structures. So this state, the state of emergency, had given the government sweeping power to suppress anti-apartheid activism, leading to a widespread of human rights abuses by the government, by the apartheid government. So its lifting marked a critical turning point in South Africa's transition away from institutionalized racial segregation and oppression. So this move opened the door for negotiations between the government and anti-apartheid leaders, including also Nelson Mandela, setting the stage for the eventually dismantling of apartheid and the birth of a democratic South Africa. So moving westward to Togo, June the 10th, 2003, marked a significant political event with the presidential election that saw the long-time incumbent Nasigbe Eadema re-elected. Now, Eadema had been in power since 1967 coup, and his rule was often criticized for electoral irregularities and human rights concerns. So this election highlighted ongoing challenges in many African nations regarding democratic governance, transparency, and the peaceful transfer of power. So, and far from home, but connected to Mediterranean geopolitics. So the North African state of Tripoli declared war on the United States on the 10th of June, 1801. So, and this event was part of the large Barbary Wars as local powers opposed foreign intrusions into their coastal waters. So, well, that's what we have in this segment on this day in Africa. So Tuesday, the 10th of June, today, the thought for today is time is like a bird. If you don't catch it, it flies away. You will never see it again. So time is like a bird. If you don't catch it, it flies away and you will never see it again. So the Proverbs actually serves as a friendly push to be proactive. So you must seize opportunities the moment they present themselves. So in terms of career, don't wait for the perfect moment to pitch your ideas. You might actually miss your window. So in terms of relationship, you know, reach out to loved ones now. Don't wait until it's too late. So, and in terms of personal growth, start today. Delay steals potential gains. So you must start today because that delay would actually steal your potential gains. So in short, grasp the moment and before it flies away forever. So that's what, you know, today's thought of the day is about. Grasp the moment. So before it flies away forever. So you must seize opportunities and the moment they present themselves. That's the thought of the day. Hopefully that help. So that help you to, you know, to, that will guide your day, today. So good morning. If you're just joining us, so stay tuned. After this, we will actually start getting into, our first stories. So stay tuned.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna iimatina omjo. Chikao shafa sana na longeshifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anageshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nirandithoma yoe yongeshifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma onoraje tatu imwe. Datundatu heari jamano tano oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views.
So very good morning to you. If you're just joining us, welcome to Unpacking the Day live on Eagle FM. So welcome back to Unpacking the Day. So in yesterday's edition of The Villages, there was a story by Anacleta Haikera, about Rundu water crisis, a situation that threatens the very foundation of when you're talking about, you know, urban development. So definitely without water, that becomes when you don't have water, that actually threatens the very foundation of urban development in our country. So, well, the numbers don't lie. So let's look at what the story is all about. Let me paint you a picture actually of what is happening in Rundu right now. maybe not right now, but you know, what is the situation like in Rwanda? So, well, this town, which has become actually home to over 105,000 people, actually Rwanda is growing, as of recent count, is literally running dry. Now, we have about, you know, so we have about, you know, 105,000 people, and, you know, from the, as I said, from the recent count, and Rundu is literally running dry. So we're looking at a community that represent actually 65% of the entire Kavango East region's populations, all concentrated in one urban area. 65% of the entire Kavango East region populations, it's all concentrated in one urban area. So the growth we are witnessing, well, it's not just impressive. It is actually alarming. It's not actually, we can't say that it's impressive. It's alarming. The official record shows Rundu's population has been expanding at rate between 1.6 and 1.4% annually. Well, depending on which measurement you trust. So it's growing. It's really growing at that fast pace, you know, at that rate between 1.6 to 5.4 annually. So, but here's the critical issue. So while the population, here is now the critical issue, because while the population is exploded, the water infrastructure remain frozen in the time. So they remain actually frozen in time. What we mean is that we are essentially trying to, you know, to quench, if you can use this language, we are essentially trying to quench the thirsty of a modern city, of a modern town, with the pipes and treatment facilities that were designed for a much smaller community decades ago. Yeah. So now, what I'm saying is this. Look, the Rundu we have, the facilities that we have, the treatment facilities that are there, the pipes that are there, actually was meant for a smaller town at that time, a smaller community, some decades ago or years ago. So what we're trying now is actually the population exploded, and the water actually infrastructure has never been renovated, has never been improved. So that is the issue. And the current water supply situation so reveals, I think it reveals a plain mathematical reality. So Rundu receives only 857 cubic meters of water daily against the demand of 1,400 cubic meters. That's according to the story, according to the article by Anna Kleta. So 857 cubic meters of water daily. So against the demand, what is the demand? Is about 1,400 cubic meters. Now that the shortfall, so the shortfall 543 cubic meters. So every day there is a shortfall of 543 cubic meters every single day. So that's to put this in perspective for our listeners is that missing water. That 543 cubic meters that we're missing every day, that they're missing every day, that water could save actually 1,000 of additional households. 543 cubic meters could be save 1,000 of individual households as well. So this is not just when we look at this, this is not just about inconvenience. This is not just inconvenience. you know, when we talk about water, or like what we talked yesterday about electricity and things like, we are talking about, this is about basic human dignity. You know, when you, because when you don't have water, what happened to people? They go to, you know, maybe to the bushes to help themselves. We're talking about sanitation. They go to the bushes and help themselves. That doesn't show human dignity. So when there's no water, there's the issues of cholera, the issues of other diseases that actually, you know, emerge. That doesn't show dignity. That's why I said this is about basic human dignity and the fundamental right to clean water. It is within our a right, is it within our constitution that's the fundamental right to clean water. So now let's talk about what might be the most infuriating aspect of this crisis. So what is more make you angry, you know, or infuriating you, you know, I think is the right word to infuriate somebody, you know. The massive waste happening right under, you know, there's a massive waste that is actually happening, right? So what is the word? And, you know, something that is, this is the waste of water that is happening right in front of the people. Nearly 30% of the water that does not make it in Rundu system disappear before it reaches the residents. So where does it disappear? Where does this water actually disappear? According to the article, and I want you to think about that for a moment. About 30% water that does not make it into the Rundu system that actually, you know, distribute water disappear before it reaches the residents. So where does it go? In a town desperately short of water. Imagine that. So 30%, it's quite a lot, but it doesn't get into the people. So in the town that now desperately short of water, so we're losing actually almost one third of our precious supply to leaks, to illegal connections, and also failing infrastructure. So the whole question of the infrastructure are not improved. So there are a lot of illegal connection and quiet leaks. And this is also, this is also not just happening in Rundu, but we're focusing on the story in Rundu at the moment. So, and this is not just about poor maintenance. And I think this is what we need to think. It's not just a poor maintenance. Eh? Seriously. And this is what we need to think seriously. This is not just a poor maintenance. This represents a systemic failure of urban planning and resource management. It comes to that. You know, poor maintenance is just a symptom, you know. But beneath that, the issue of systemic failure of urban planning and resource management. It comes to that. So, and the existing dam water schemes operating in Rundu have a combined capacity of approximately 840 cubic meter per hour, but they are running at maximum capacity with a reservoir level dangerously low, sometimes as low as 4% to 30%. So these are crisis level indicators that should have triggered, according to the expert, emergency responses years ago. So the infrastructure serving Rundu today was built for a different era. As I said, it was built for a smaller population with a different water consumption patterns. And that has grown. Now we have witnessed what happened when urban growth, you know, when urban growth completely outpaced the infrastructure development. So that's what happened to Rundu. So the infrastructure that are currently there were not actually meant for the population that is there now. It was actually built for a different era and a smaller community or a smaller populations and with a different water consumption patterns at that time. And now we see that the urban has grown, the town has grown, and it completely outpaced the infrastructure development. There was nothing done now to meet the demand of the population that we have in Rundu at the moment. So you have the aging treatment plants, deteriorating pipelines. That's why you have so much leaks, and inadequate storage facilities represent years of overdue maintenance and insufficient investments. There hasn't been investment on deteriorating pipelines, on the treatment plants, on the storage facilities. There hasn't been. So that's why, you know, that kind of experience. That's what is going on. And as I said, like saying that this is not just about Rundu. It's not just about in Rundu. So now what makes this particularly troubling? So what makes this, according to this, to the story, when you're looking at, when you analyze certain aspects in the story. So what makes this particularly troubling is that solution exists. Namwater has plans for upgrading the Rundu water treatment plant with increased capacity of 1,800 cubic meters per hour to meet the demand through 2037. Okay, there is a plan. The plan is there, but there aren't pie in the sky's proposals. These are not pie in the sky's kind of proposal. These are concrete, you know, engineered solutions. The question becomes, why aren't they being implemented fast enough? Why? Why this plan? They are there, the plan. As I said, the solution exists, but the problem is that why? The question is, why are they not being implemented fast enough? Well, the problem is very clear. Here is where the story takes a darker turn. So when you look at the story here, take a dark turn. And frankly, it's where we need to have an uncomfortable conversation about civic responsibility. So this is where now we need to have this, you know, uncomfortable conversation. So about your responsibility, your civic responsibility. So now, the mounting unpaid water bills in Rundu represent a more than just financial problems. They reveal a breakdown in the social contract. Yesterday I was talking about this. A social contract between the resident and their local government. That actually is not just about this is an issue of financial problems. That it's actually revealed that there's a breakdown in the social contract between the residents and their local government. So when communities, when community refuses to pay for essential services, so they create that vicious circle. They create that vicious circle that ultimately hurt everyone. So it hurts everyone. The local council cannot invest in infrastructure upgrade without revenue. So if they don't have the revenue because you haven't paid, as I said, it creates that a vicious cycle that in the end, it also hurts you as an individual. So because local council cannot invest in infrastructure upgrade without revenue, they cannot maintain existing system without the cash flow. If there's no money coming in, they cannot actually maintaining this existing system. They cannot plan for future growth without financial sustainability. So if you don't pay your bills, there is no financial sustainability within the council. So therefore, they can't plan. So what we are seeing in Rundu is a community that expect improved services while refusing actually to fund them. This is now a community that they want, they expect any improved services, but they refuse to pay for the services that they receive. So this payment crisis, as I said, is not unique to Rundu actually. This is not something that is actually unique to Rundu, but it's particularly devastating in a town like Rundu that is actually rapidly growing. Yeah? And where the infrastructure need are so urgent. The infrastructure needs here are so urgent. So, and the payment becomes a very, 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 the payment crisis become very important. So you have to understand that every unpaid bill represent a delayed repairs. If you don't pay, how can they repair things? It actually represent a delayed repairs. It represent a postponed upgrade. So they can't a postponed upgrade, a reduced capacity to serve the community. So as I said, the mathematics are simple. The mathematics are simple. So if you want better services, well, someone have to pay the bill. Someone have to pay them. So the culture of non-payment also really sends a troubling message. A troubling message about civic engagement and also the community ownership. That's very important. It's really sending that troubling message about civic engagement and the most important things about community ownership. We have to own the service that we receive. So when residents actually disconnect from their responsibility to support local services, they essentially abandon their right to demand improvement. You have no right actually to ask for improvement. Because you actually haven't do your responsibility. You haven't done your civic responsibility. So that's actually a destructive pattern that really undermines democratic governance at the most basic level. So according to the story, according to the article, amid this crisis, there's a glimmer of hope emerging through technology and research. So the involvement of the National Commission on Research, Science and Technology represent a new approach to urban water management. So one based on data, monitoring, and evidence-based decision-making. So the smart monitoring system and a real-time technology, and this offer the possibility of identifying exactly where water losses occur. So potentially then be able to recover that crucial 30% that currently were being wasted. So this technology can be able to detect and identify exactly where the water losses occur. So if there is a leak somewhere, it can be able to identify where the leak is. And that would quickly be able, now you can be able to quickly be able to repair, to do your repair, because it's based on, you know, this is monitoring system, technology monitoring system, and also evidence based, you know. So you know where the issue is and you can make a decision right there. So now, if successful, this could effectively increase Rundu water access by that 30% without adding a single drop to the supply. So that's the power of efficiency and smart management. So now these research initiatives also provide something equally valuable, because when you have all these datas, credible data for invest, because this now become data that you can use for investment proposals. So international development partners and the government agencies are more likely actually to fund projects backed by solid research and clear evidence of need. So the data being collected could be the key to really unlock the billions needed for the infrastructure replacement. So now, my dear listeners, what's happening in Rundu is not an isolated crisis. It's a preview of challenges facing urban centers across Namibia. That definitely is not us. I have seen that in a number of towns. Now, so the country's cabinet has already approved urgent measures to combat water shortages, recognizing that insufficient water supplies threaten multiple regions, so and development in those regions. So with the climate change intensifying arid conditions and erratic rainfall patterns, water scarcity is becoming a national security issues, and sometimes also beg the questions why we don't have, you know, way of making sure that, you know, for example, harvesting the water that has dried up already. So in most part of the country where there were floods. So if we could have harvest maybe half of the water that was available, that would make still a difference. So yeah, as we have recognized that it becoming, you know, the scarcity of water scarcity is becoming a national security issue. So, but still not doing enough to make sure that we are water secure in the way how we do things. Now, the Kavango East region, with over 208,000 people as of 2023, depend heavily on Rundu as its economic and administrative center. So all these people depend on Rundu. So if Rundu water crisis deepens, if it becomes more an issue, it will have actually ripple effect throughout the regions. So it could affect many things. It could affect economic development. You can't have economic development without water. So one of that, it will also affect health. Without water, sanitations, without water, you know, there would be a number of diseases. Cholera, for example, you know, there will be a number of diseases that may occur because of water scarcity. Well, and generally social stability. So Namibia, NamWater, broader infrastructure investment of over 1.5 billion Namibian dollars demonstrate that water challenges extend far beyond Rundu. So these are national scale problems requiring coordinated responses at multiple level of government. So what Rundu crisis teaches us is that sustainable urban development require integrated planning that matches infrastructure development with population growth. And that's very important, you know, for us to have that sustainable urban development. So we requires actually what? Integrated planning. So integrated planning that matches, first of all, infrastructure development. So in this case, we have all these old facilities that it doesn't meet the population growth of Rundu today. And this is not only for Rundu. That's also happened. That's also the case in many other parts of the country, in many towns. So you cannot have one without the other. Cities or towns cannot grow sustainably if their foundation service, if their foundational services, water, sanitation, electricity, are not scaled appropriately. They can't. So the whole idea of a multi-pronged approach being proposed, so which actually then the infrastructure replacement community, and also involving this kind of approach also involve community educations, and then the whole idea of smart monitoring. So that represents the kind of a comprehensive thinking needed to address a complex urban challenges. So, but success will definitely depend on sustained commitment from all stakeholders, the government, your commitment, your the communities. You have a responsibility as well, and also then from development partners that may actually fund some of these projects as well. So it actually depend on that sustained commitment from everyone. So the Rundu water crisis serve us both from the story. It serves us a warning and also an opportunity. It's a warning about what happened when urban growth actually outpaces infrastructure planning and community responsibility. So if that happens, we can see where we find ourselves. So, but it's also an opportunity, I think, to demonstrate how, when we're talking about now the technology, the research, and coordinated action, it's also an opportunity so that can, when we have all this, that can solve seemingly persistent problem. We can see that with this persisting, you know, persistent problems can be solved. So they can be solved. So the 543 cubic meters of daily water shortage in Rundu, so represent more than just than just a number. It represent familiar. It actually represent, it represent, you know, families without reliable access to clean water. So that number, that shortage, in Rundu, it represents businesses struggling to operate. It's not just a number. It also, it represents a real situation in Rundu, a community development potential being constrained by basic service failures. So the question for all of us, whether we live in Rundu or anywhere else in Namibia, is this. Are we willing to learn from Rundu's challenges and demand a better planning, a better accountability, and a better coordination between growth and infrastructure development, as we have seen? For your town, so should we demand better planning, better accountability, and better coordination? So, because if we don't, Rundu crisis today could be any Namibian town's crisis tomorrow. It could be any Namibian town crisis next day, tomorrow. So my dear listener, so keep thinking critically, keep demanding accountability, and remember, sustainable development starts with sustainable communities. So if we're talking about sustainable development, we have to talk about sustainable community. So because it's down, it starts from down up. All right. So what do you think about the issue, the crisis, water crisis in Rundu? So is this is only in Rundu, or this is also happening in your own small town? You could be in Okakarala, you could be in, you know, Poor, you could be in Karasberg, it could be, you know, in Khibion, you could be in Enana, you could be Okongo, you know, you could be, you know, Tsandi, Kahao, or something like that. Are you experiencing the same thing? So you must welcome to come through. Our telephone number is 08333-66091, 08333-66091. So if you want to come through and have your comment, have your contribution on this whole question of water crisis. We're looking at Rundu, but as a story by Anna Kletter that is in our e-newspaper, the villager of yesterday's editions. So do subscribe to the villager. All that you need to do is just send your name and a WhatsApp message. Send it to WhatsApp message with your name and email address to 081-241-44, 081-241-44. So, and you will be receiving your digital copy every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So make sure that you do that. And this is where we get this story. So what is your contribution? What is your take? What are your opinion when it comes to water crisis in the country, in general, in your town, and in your villages? So give us a call. 08-333-66091.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved IMBA that brings together various hymn books under one app, here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on IMBA app are the Elsin Ehangano, Rio Sherero o Maimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of IMBA hymn books. 081-238-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover IMBA today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Yes, you are tuning to Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. Our time is about 45 minutes past 8, quarter to 9. And Unpacking the Day actually goes up to 9:30 this morning. And so you're most welcome to come through. Our telephone number is 083-336-091. If you want to contribute to the item that we have covered so far, it's about Rundu Waters crisis. Rundu Waters crisis, a story that is actually covered by Anakleta Haikera, in our yesterday's edition of The Villager. So, and really looking at when growth, especially population growth, outpaces the infrastructure. So it highlights actually issues the Rundu town is actually going through, because it cannot actually live up to the demand of the population, which has become so much, which actually the pace of growth is quite fast, and then the infrastructure cannot actually live up to with the population growth, and there hasn't been any done for years. There hasn't been any renovation or improvement of the infrastructure or replacement of the infrastructure to meet the need. Definitely, and imagine we're looking at a community that now the 65% of the entire Kavango East region's populations are concentrated now in urban area in Rundu. So yeah, the growth rate, the expanding rate, between 1.6 to 5.4 annually. That's where we have. Yesterday we were talking, even we're talking about energy, we're talking about electricity yesterday, and today about water and how that actually affect the ripple effect these resources have on development, urban development, and also on overall development of our cities, of our towns, and of our people. So it's something, without water, without electricity, these are things that we're talking about. Definitely we find ourselves in that circle, you know, vicious circles, where we really don't move anywhere. So, but the other concerning aspect is the what? Non-payment of residents as well. which make it difficult for the council to be able to actually improve the infrastructures, repair things that are repair and maintain, you know, the infrastructure, and even maybe to plan. They cannot plan because they have no revenue to do that. So they cannot actually plan a sustainable future for the town because there are no revenue to be able to do that. So payment problem, that culture of non-accountability, I think it has to change. So you cannot actually demand, what we're talking about is that you can't demand, you know, improved services when you don't want to pay for the services. So the citizen of whatever town, it's not only Rundu. So if you find yourself in this situation, it's also depend on you. It's also definitely depend on you. So that mounting unpaid bills, you know, so as I said, it reveals that the breaking down in the social contract between the resident and their local government. So if when the community actually refuses to pay for essential services, you know, you create that vicious circle, which doesn't only hurt, you know, maybe the town council, it's also hurting you yourself, the residents of that town. So as I said, the local council cannot invest in infrastructure, for example, upgrade if they want to improve. They have no money. Without revenue, they cannot actually invest in infrastructure upgrade, which is needed actually to meet the demand of the population growth. So they cannot maintain existing systems. You know, if they don't have some cash flow that's coming in. So, and they cannot plan for the future growth without really financial sustainability. If there's no financial sustainability, that cannot really happen. So now, what we're seeing in Rundu, as what we're seeing, is a community that expect, you know, you want a community that is expect improved services, while also refusing actually to fund them. That cannot, you know, create an opportunity of growth when it comes to development, urban development then. So, yeah, so what is your comment? What is your take? Our telephone number again, 0833-66-091. So you're welcome to come through, have your opinion and your comments and your take on what is happening in Rundu. And it's not only happening in Rundu, it could be also happening in your own town. So what is your experience like when it comes to water bills and the level of the infrastructures that you have in your town that actually, you know, making sure that the water security in your town it's making sure that you have all the necessary facilities to be able to do that. Yeah, but you have a responsibility as well, as we said. You know, you have a responsibility, civic responsibility, to make sure that you pay for the service that you receive. So 0833-66-091 is the number to call if you want to share your opinion. Also, if you want to share your situation around where you're from, in your town, in your villages, please do come through and have your share of what is happening in and around your place as well. All right. So when we come back, which you're most welcome to actually, you know, come through anytime, especially on this item as well. So you can come through anytime. So we're going to look at the next item as well. So stay tuned.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nirandito mwa yoe yonge shifa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma konorahi tatu imwe. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM in any of it.
All right. What time is about 5 minutes to the hour of 9? And you are most welcome. The other thing is that, if you were listening in the morning at Early Morning Scoop, and that there are also maybe areas that or item that were covered that you would like maybe to share or to talk about or have your comment on or reaction on, so you're most welcome. So in this show, you're most also welcome to talk about stories that we have covered in Early Morning Scoop, and be able to, if you want to comment on that or share your opinions or contribute to those stories as well, you're most welcome to do that. And just reminding you, our telephone number is 08 333 66 091. So yeah, there has been a foreign land ownership debate, which actually, I think it's something. It's there's a parliamentary committee that's actually responsible for investigation or consultations. So, and this become a really issue of constitution. And now it become a question whether this is a constitutional crisis or economic necessity when you're looking at this. So the land ownership bill, a bill controversy has, it has the parliamentarian, it has the constitutional expert, and ordinary Namibian asking fundamental question about, sovereignty, about economic development, and also a constitutional right. So, and the story, to be fair, the story actually begins with a simple but explosive question. Simple but explosive. Should foreign nationals be allowed to own land in Namibia? Simple question. Should foreign nationals be allowed to own land in Namibia? So, what seems like a straightforward policy questions has evolved into, well, one constitutional crisis that revealed deeper cracks, I think, in our approach to land reform and also economic development and national sovereignty. So, Let's start with the constitutional heart of this matter. All right. The affirmative repositioning, movement, sparked this debate when they when they petitioned Parliament back in 2019, demanding strict regulations of foreign land ownership. But here is where now the things get complicated, and also maybe the fascinating from these things now get fascinating from legal perspective. Some legal expert actually contribute to this. Now, so according to the legal perspective, our constitution, specifically Article 16, create what lawyers call, this is what lawyers call a constitutional paradox. Okay? So what is that? On one hand, so we're talking about the should foreign nationals be allowed to own land in Namibia. So the lawyers now call it has some constitutional implications, specifically apparently Article 16. You know, so the paradox is that on one hand it guarantees, so this Article 16, it guarantees all persons, all the right to acquire, to own, and to dispose of property anywhere in Namibia. All peoples, it doesn't segregate, it doesn't discriminate, okay, on one hand. On the other hand, it explicitly gives parliamentarian the power. Now, in the first one, on one part, it allows everybody to acquire, own, and dispose of property anywhere in Namibia. And on the other hand, it also explicitly gives Parliament the power to prohibit or regulate property acquisition by non-citizens. Okay? This is now the paradox. One is to allow that anybody can have a land, can acquire and own and dispose property, but it also give the power explicitly give Parliament the power to prohibit or regulate property acquisition by non-citizens. Now, so well, they said this is not accidental; it is a deliberate constitutional design that require a careful balance. So otherwise you end up, you know, your whole country being purchased by foreign entities or foreign owners. Now, the Parliament Standing Committee on Natural Resources discovered that the proposed bill create a direct conflict with our supreme law. So that's what they discovered. So that if we pass a legislation that treat non-Namibian citizens fundamentally different from Namibian citizen in property ownership, we potentially violate Article 10's equality provision. So that's what they discovered. The Parliamentary Committee actually Standing Committee on Natural Resources discovered that if we go ahead with the bill as proposed, it create that direct conflict with our supreme law, because then you if you pass a legislation that treat non-Namibian citizens differently from Namibian citizens in property ownership, we potentially violate Article 10's equality, Article 10 equality provisions. All right. So now the committee's investigations reveals actually a critical flaw in the legislative approach. So the bill, it does not just regulate foreign ownership, it creates what constitutional scholars would call differential treatment. Differential treatment that may be difficult to justify under our equality provisions. So do you understand? So that's in the committee's report. So that would be a problem. So I think this put now the parliament in an incredibly difficult position. How do you fulfill the constitutional mandate to regulate foreign property ownership while maintaining constitutional coherence? So this is the challenge. So, yeah. And now, the issue, there's also an issue of economic realities versus also what some others would call political aspirations. So what that means is that there is that economic dimension that often get overshadowed by the political rhetoric. All right? So the Parliament Committee made a striking finding about the proposed reduction of lease period from 99 years to just 10 years. So there was that proposal that because at the current regulation, at the current law, it's the lease period is from 99 years. So what now the proposed reduction is from that 99 years to just 10 years. Now, well, this is not just a number on paper, but it represents a fundamental, according to the committee now, it represents a fundamental misunderstanding of how modern investment works. So consider the committee actually said, it said, look, consider this from an investor's perspective. All right? So would you commit millions of dollars to, let's say, for example, develop an agricultural land? Now, you're developing an agricultural land, build infrastructure, or establish long-term operation. If your lease could expire in just one decade, just in 10 years. So the committee assessment that 99 years represent a worldwide, so for them, they said, well, this is representing a worldwide benchmark practice, and that reflects a global economic reality, not a colonial thinking, as some, you know, politician would like to frame it. So, now project financing, insurance, and long term planning all depend on security of tenure. That span generation, not election cycles. That's according now to the committee, that it's not according to the election cycles, which is actually about 10 years, but it depends on security of 10 years, that spans generation. So that's why it's actually 99 years. Now, this then create what the economists now call a policy contradiction. So, on one hand, Namibia desperately need foreign investment to develop our agricultural sector, for example, and create jobs and transfer technologies. So, now on one side. On the other hand, the proposed restriction would make Namibia one of the least attractive investment destination in the region, if it's reduced actually to 10 years, who would like actually to invest into like, as I said, if you have to come, if you come to, you know, developing an agricultural land within 10 years, you know? So it becomes now, that's now, as I said, what the economists call that, that policy contradictions. So where now we were, Namibia, we need that foreign investment to develop our agricultural sector, to develop, to actually create jobs and transform technology. So, but on the other hand, you know, the restriction that is being proposed would make actually Namibia one of the least attractive investment destinations. So now the committee's conclusions that the 10-year proposal is not commercial viable, and it reflects the stark economic of reality today. So, but here's the deeper issue also. Okay? Here's the deeper issue also. So the debate reveals a fundamental tension. Okay? A fundamental tension between immediate political satisfactions, you know, because you would like to actually deal, to do something about this problem now. You understand? So that tension between immediate political satisfaction that you would like to do something right now, but, and also a long-term economic development. So the short-term lease that is being proposed, the short-term lease period, might feel politically satisfying, okay? But they could devastate our ability now to attract the very investment we need to develop agricultural sectors that would ultimately benefit all Namibians. You see that tension. So, yeah, that's an issue, and the lawmakers need to pay attention to. So, but let's examine the statistics that actually fuel this controversy, that make this controversy what it is, because, well, numbers often reveal the truth than that political rhetoric obscures sometimes. You know, the political obscure sometimes, you know, obscure the truth. But when you look at the numbers, the data present a complex picture that defies simple narrative about foreign domination. You know, when people actually just say, you know, the ownership is actually dominated by foreign entities and owners. Now, from Namibia's 39 million hectares of freehold agricultural land, now foreign nationals own approximately 250 farms covering 1.2 million hectares. Now, from 39 million hectares of a freehold agricultural, the foreigners only own about 250 farmers, which is only covering about 1.2 million hectares. Now, to put this in perspective, now, just as I said, the numbers sometimes actually tell the truth than sometimes the rhetoric, political rhetoric that sometimes try to obscure the reality. Now, to put this in perspective, while Namibian own 27% of freehold land, 27% of the freehold land, black Namibians own, the white Namibians own 27% of freehold land, the white Namibians, and black Namibians own about 16%. And the government owns about 14%. So this number reveals several important realities, if you can see that. So it's not actually the foreign nationals who own much of the of the land, it's actually Namibians, especially white Namibians. Maybe just because they are white, we tend to think they're foreigners. All right. So first, foreign owners, foreign ownership, it is significant. While significant, represent really a relatively small percentage of total agricultural land. So secondly, the large issue appears to be the maybe what we call the historical imbalances between Namibians communities, between Namibian community, rather than actually foreign ownership per se. So thirdly, the government's ownership of only 14% of agricultural land raises also question about the state's capacity to drive land reform through direct ownership.
June 7 Adventure Tours is offering an exclusive 20% discount for all local Namibians for the month of June and July. Get ready for an unforgettable quad biking and sandboarding adventure in the dunes. Parents, please bring the children to come and have fun on 20% discounted prices this coming June and July month. For more information, contact 081-624-9665.
You got a fam? Welcome to Unpacking the Day. Very good morning to you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Good morning, Anonymous.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear him. I can hear you, but you're disappearing. Now you disappear. I can't hear you anymore. Can you call back again? Yeah, you come in and out. So please do come call back again if you just to see if that can improve a little bit. So you were coming in, but I can hear you at one point and at another I can't hear you anymore. Please do come through. Our telephone number 08-0833-66-091. So, all right. So, as you can see, as we have seen, you know, the foreign ownership, while it is very significant, actually represent a relatively small percentage of the total agricultural land. So, the second thing is that the large issue here, it's the large issue appear to be as we can maybe say the historical imbalances between a different Namibians community rather than actually foreign ownership per se. All right. So now the breakdown of the 12,380 privately owned farms tell another story. Igor FM. Good morning.
Bon dia, família. Bon dia.
Bon dia. Como está?
Obrigado. Sou frio, não vale a pena.
Ah, tem problema.
Não tem problema.
Tem problema. Cold.
Problema, tá? O frio não perde osso. Vai de e eu tenho aqui para
So how are you?
I'm fine, thanks, my boss.
I'm all right, man.
Man, I just want to bring something different because I don't think I'll have a chance to go. Maybe it might even bring something good to what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I know you have a program.
Yeah.
And this thing is hurting me, man. I don't want to die with it.
you're not gonna die. Okay. What is it?
You know, I have concern about our sport, man. This guy, you know, this our Nakatila.
Yeah.
He lost now in America, and I'm thinking about. I think our government, our sport, need to just to step up. Think about our boxer, because I don't think Nagashila.
Think about them in terms of what?
You know, it's like these guys, they are good boxers.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think this Nagashila could lose to that Abdul. So what I'm thinking about, our boxer...
Abdul was... Did you watch the box? Did you watch it?
Yes.
You did watch it?
Yes.
Abdul was good.
Abdul, that guy is good because he's 21 years old. They have a proper training. So yeah. What happened to our boxer? This guy Nakatila could have a defense and offense. So this guy to defense is not good. Our boxer not good. So I think if this guy gets a proper training on defense and footwork, I don't think that Abdul could beat our boxer. And even Sekua Stevenson, the one who fight him before this guy, would beat this guy. Nakatila is a puncher.
But we have done that before. We have beaten, you know, international people that boxers that are coming from developed country before. We have done that before. So Nakafila hasn't just, you know, stepped up to the plate.
No, he stepped up, but it's not enough. He needs more experience now.
He just didn't step up to the plate.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Mm. We need really our. To shape up our boxer. Don't because this guy's natural boxer. Now just let him go to fight with these guys. And this guy, they study you. They say, okay, if this guy is a good puncher, so let us now try to minimize how they manipulate your mind to beat you up. No, just imagine that guy's 21 years older fighting with Nakafila as the champion, and Nakafila going to lose again because we don't care about try to get these Americans who can train you in defense and footwork. So you can even give something to the country. And yeah. I was so disappointed,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys want a government actually even to dictate what you do in the bedroom, actually.
No, at least just to put something on these guys for them to, you know, they're trying to bring something to our country, my brother, even to represent Namibia in that matter.
No, what I'm saying is that I understand what he's saying, but what I'm saying is that others in Namibia, from Namibia, have made it. They have actually, they have actually beaten, you know, a couple boxers coming from international, from a developed country. So, as I said, maybe his trainers. It's only his trainers that that need to improve, so that he can improve. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe need money, or maybe you know. I was just following the history before they fight Nakatila. They're going to study you, and those guys they're gonna work on your weak point. Until they know this guy is not a cover, cannot even cover his face. So this guy just like to use one hand, which are so powerful. So they will minimize that thing until they come and beat you up. So I want to also ask, as Namibians, please, just to think about these guys who are boxing outside of the country, to have a proper trainer to train them on footwork, on defense, on offense, on how to try to maneuver these guys, man. I don't believe that boy could beat our Nakatila, man. Serious.
But he was. I felt Abdul was very good. Seriously.
Yeah.
He was fast. You know, he never gave him actually opportunity, you know, to even throw a punch or something like that. And as you're saying, I think it's because they have studied him well. And that's what you do with your opponent. You study them, and then you put up a fight that actually counter his weaknesses.
I was even following before this guy fights Nakatila. So this guy is having a trainer, but they try to get somebody who will teach him how to fight this guy. So why we don't do the same thing? Why we don't say, okay, you are going to fight Sekua Stevenson, or even Javante Davis, or even Kelvin, or whatever. So this guy is good on this system. So for you to beat him, so you need to train this ABCD just for you to be up to date. To give, I want this boxer to give a role model to somebody who are coming to as a boxer tomorrow. To know, okay, if I come up to this stage, I know I have support and I do as I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yes, I really need these people to our people to look at this kind of thing, because I follow up very well the system of those Americans they will study you. They've got somebody, a specialist on a footwork and a defense and offense. Now, when Nagasila want to punch, you can see this guy want to punch. So, just think about that that guy who beat Nagasila. When this guy is punching, you don't see his punching. Yeah, he's hide punching, but he's going to hit you. So, I want also that our boxer to have the same training so we can talk louder one day.
Yeah, yeah, no, we really have. I agree with you. I in terms of we need to put money into it, the government actually promised to do that. So hopefully it pump money into boxing as well, because boxing has been really one of the sport that have put Namibia on the map. So hopefully that what you're asking, Sheikh, could be done. Yeah.
You know, he already lost against Sekua Stevenson, and I was not even happy. I was thinking maybe when they come back from America, they will start these guys and see what they can bring up to motivate our boxer to be up. This guy is power, man. This guy has power. If this guy get a good training and punch anybody, hide them punch, this guy will follow, won't even think about tomorrow to fight, even a rematch with Nagasila. Nagasila is a good puncher, but he just did a tactic and good training and so on.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you, my brother. Yeah, I almost died because of that. Now I'm free.
Yeah, no, I didn't want you to die. So you shouldn't die on my watch, actually. All right.
Boa tarde, bom dia.
Bom dia.
Obrigado.
All right. I'm not going to have someone dying on my watch. All right. So, we really. You good, FM? Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, good day.
Yes.
I'm back.
Yeah, no, there was a time I couldn't hear you. Yeah. Mm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, I just wanted to find out with regards to the recent, first of all, the radio's still not working in the coast.
Yeah, no, we know.
I have to remind you every day, Mike.
Yeah.
I have to remind you every day.
I'm doing that the same thing to my bosses and my management to say, look, I'm being reminded. I'm on the one on the front line. So
yeah.
I need to make sure I do that every day as well. Yeah.
That is a must. But, I wanted to say to you, the recent speech by Nekundi he gave a speech about the prisons and the state of the prisons.
Oh yeah, to the workshop that is taking place. There's a workshop that is actually
taking
place.
He gave the speech at the workshop on behalf, I think, of the minister.
Yeah, okay, so it was the minister who actually was speaking.
I think he was giving he's not a deputy, né? He was giving it on behalf of the minister, and he was saying about the prisons. And I think that is one area where government needs to relieve itself of responsibility and really privatize prisons.
Privatize prisons?
Yeah, yeah. For instance, in other countries, prisons are private businesses owned by, you know, private individuals, and the government only gets a cut from it.
How does that work?
Well, you come in and you say you're going to deliver a service.
Yeah.
What's the service? I'm going to not only train and rehabilitate and make sure that prisoners live at a certain standard of life, but we also try to get them back into society. Those that can be brought back, and those that can't, we house them in at least the minimal humane as possible.
But the government, the budget that goes to, let's say, for example,
government pays that company, that private company. But obviously, it's a tender and the government can pay as little as possible. Also, government doesn't have the responsibility of the employees and all of these other things.
Oh, okay.
So that's how it works.
Would that private company would also then find a way to, how would I say it, to make money?
They get paid on the basis of the tender.
On the basis of the tender only. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But that company would then have to, invest a certain amount of capital to rehabilitate the prison's infrastructure because it's outdated. to house the prisoners, to make sure you keep them in a certain level that is humane, as while obviously allowing them, not turning the thing into a hotel, but allowing them to remain prisoners, and then also organizing them in different ways. For instance, right now it's messed up. You go in for, you kidnapped a cat.
Yeah.
And then you are staying with the guy who killed his family. And you know what I mean? And he keeps talking in the night about killing you. So it's about using this prison system to prevent more hardened criminals to come out and to have those that are with similar charges or at a similar level, have them on one level.
Yeah.
You know, if you stole bread, you stay with fellow bread thieves. You know, so that you don't go in and you become an expert at now stealing planes.
Yeah. So
you know what I mean?
You only went in stealing bread. Now you're going to be upgraded being in jail. Now you learn
how... We don't want to send you to criminal university. We want you to go and think about what you've done and come out a better person.
Now you're going to be upgraded, actually. You're going to be qualified. Yeah,
and some of the guys,
killing,
they even,
you know,
they even commit crimes just to get away from poverty.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing. The other thing about prisons is obviously once you make it a business, then there's incentive to people to imprisonate people or to imprison people. Sorry about that. So what needs to happen then is we need to have a cutoff point. Who gets to go to prison, right? Not everybody should get the opportunity to go to prison. This is just my personal take on it, but I think that if a man rapes a woman, for instance, a grown woman of a certain age, we cut off one arm, right? It means that his ability to rape further and also castrate has been hindered, which is what we want. We don't want him to rape again anymore. So we just cut off one arm. He can live without an arm, Mike. He can live without an arm. I mean, there are other people who are unfairly living without arms. He can live without an arm. Right, we don't have to send him to prison and waste all of our money. Let him go in Zula.
There are conventions that we actually have.
We don't have to agree with those conventions.
We are signatory to. So we won't be able to do
that. We don't have to agree with those conventions because I think it is inhumane to take a human being and lock them in a box. Right? I think that is more inhumane. Lock them in a box for, let's say, for instance, he kills a rhino. Right? Which is supposed to belong to us anyway. He kills a rhino. And now you lock him in a box for 10 years. You put his life on hold for 10 years. That is inhumane. Just cut off his arm. He won't be able to carry more. And if he steals another, kills another rhino, we cut off another arm. Now he can't carry them. So, you understand what I'm saying?
I think you want to follow a Sharia law in a Christian country.
No. Sharia law is different. Sharia law says because Muhammad said this, we're going to kill you. We're not killing. We are disabling. We are simply disabling. When something doesn't want to work well, we disable it, isn't it? Right? So we disable it. You are the top thief. Housebreaking has been your forte. We disable you. That is all. I think that's fair, Mike. I don't know why this is such a strange idea. I think it's a good idea.
No.
The worst part is I'm not even joking.
No. Somehow on an intellectual part, I agree with you. But the other part is that because really we spend half now, we have to spend a lot of money feeding this person, you know.
Yeah.
And we even people outside the jail that are actually suffering, go hungry and all that. And these guys have...
They're getting fed.
They're getting fed.
They get lotion. They get lotion. Why are they not just being given kettle fed to wipe themselves to make... Why are they getting Nivea?
Yeah.
So I think what should happen is for certain crimes, obviously there are certain crimes where it doesn't matter what you do. Right? You cannot, that is somebody that you can stick in a hole and say, you are never coming out again. But if somebody has stolen money or he has done whatever, cut off a limb. And depending on, we go like this, right arm, left leg, sorry about the R and the L. And later on, he's just in a wheelchair. Right? But now but I think after you've cut off the first arm, or the second arm, He's going to reevaluate his stance. Whether he's hungry or not, he's going to say, no, man. Later on, I have nothing. I'm just like a body now. You know? I guarantee you, crime will decrease overnight. And if anybody comes and says, you are inhumane, we say, no.
You are inhumane because you throw away somebody's life.
Anonymous, the problem comes later on. You realize that the person actually didn't do what he has been accused of.
Okay, no problem. I thought about that. Now the person is found innocent. Hey, we thought that you did this, but actually you didn't. You lost an arm. We're going to compensate you. We'll get you a prosthetic.
We
make you a millionaire. You don't pay tax for life. Sorry. It's okay. I would accept that. You know? So I think that is what Negundi should be looking into. Be more innovative. Don't just do the same thing over and over and over.
No, man. You just made my day.
Okay. So, bye, Mike.
Great, man. All right. And that's actually bring us to the end of unpacking the day and fits into well with Mind the Gap. I hope Helmut was listening and then carried this into Mind the Gap. Yeah. So yeah, that, our time is about 35 minutes past the hour of 9. And, so we have come, to the end of our unpacking the day too. Until tomorrow, all the best and have a very nice day ahead. And, well, goodbye and see you tomorrow.
Omutiha kutekirwa kakuna ii matina omjo. Chikao shafa sana nana longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moya o, ota ingongo tisa mwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seisa nina omayakuro nirandi soma yoe, yonge shifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira seoma, konora heta tuimu. Datundatu, heari hamano tano, oniari. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copies.